The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. Got a good group today. We're going to talk about just kind of what happened this past year, 2024, across central Alabama. Scott Graham, Simmer Virk here as always. Simmer, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, Scott.
And we've got a recurring guest, Blake Lanton, West Central Alabama Regional Extension Agent, and first-time guest, Christy Hicks, our East Central Regional Agent. Christy, good to have you back here with Extension and in the podcast room with us.
Yeah, good to be here. It's been a fun 3 months, so I'm happy to be back.
Has it just been 3 months? It seems like it's been longer than that. But my life right now is very slow and fast with two under three at home. It long nights, yeah. and fast days, so yeah. Time doesn't exist.
Gosh, I thought you started like earlier this year.
Yeah, end of July.
3 months. Wow.
I guess since I've been talking to her for the past couple of years, that I just feel like, yeah, she just walked right in, so I don't even.
Yeah.
Well, what happened in Central Alabama this year in row crops? What we want to talk about?
Well, the main thing was drought, and yesterday the Alabama Department of Ag came out with their designation of three disaster counties: Dallas, Perry, and Wilcox. So those counties will be available for some kind of assistance. It's best to go to your local USD service center, get some details about that. Also, the nine counties surrounding Dallas, Perry, and Wilcox, which are Otago, Bibb, Butler, Chilton, Clark, Hale, Lowndes, Marengo, and Monroe, will be added in that list of who can get some assistance for this past year of losses.
And so, just for our listeners, Blake, yesterday is December the 2nd, was when that was announced.
Sure.
We don't.
We're in the first week of December, that's what I can tell you.
My point is, we don't know when this will be posted.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not fully over control of all that, but yeah, so that early December this came
is
out.
Is there a time limit on when the growers should go and do all that usually, or?
I haven't seen a deadline on that. I would, I'd get in there as soon as possible. I'm assuming most of this is going to be in the form of a loan to get you through. So when or if we do get some assistance, it'll at least carry you over so you know you can get going next year.
Yeah, it was drought was bad, and Christy, it was bad across all of Central Alabama, not just West Central.
Yeah. Do you have any counties that are part of that too?
Otago would be one of her counties.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was those first three counties you listed, and then adjoining counties.
Yes, it's Dallas, Perry, and Wilcox, and any contiguous counties touching those counties.
Oh, okay.
And contiguous is the big word for the day.
It's on this piece of paper right here. So I was able to pronounce it right.
Good deal.
But yeah, go to your local FSA USDA office and get a little more information on that.
Okay. So Christy, we had Blake earlier, second episode, I guess, provided us a crop update from West Central Alabama, I guess. What's the crops update from your region?
East Central Alabama, I will say, had two extremes. We had the majority of the people were surprised on the good side with their cotton yields. I've talked to several guys that, they're like, hey, it ended up being a little bit more than we thought, which is always positive. But we did have some pockets, especially on the extreme east side of the state, that they struggled. They stayed in a drought. And, of course, peanut yields, cotton yields, they all struggled. But like I say, we did have some bright spots. There were some guys that, just riding the picker with them and talking to them, hey, this is the best cotton we've had in 3 or 4 years. They did not have rain when the cotton started opening, so a lot less boll rot than we would normally have. We had a little bit of CBR and some peanuts over in the extreme east side of the state. It occurred late in the season, so we don't think, it wasn't widespread. It was just kind of one spot. It was kind of an anomaly. And so we did have that, a little bit of tomato spotted wilt. But I think the big thing this year for me was just how bad nematodes were. I mean, they showed up obviously in some cotton here in East Central Alabama, but the southwest part of the state, they had soybean fields and peanut fields that were, it was just a visual, you know, bad situation. And obviously whenever the yields come in, you know, that was kind of a rough situation there. But I'd say overall, in a lot of years like this, we have a mixed bag. We have some really good yields, and then we have some that obviously were in dry pockets and struggled.
Yeah, plenty of date probably played a pretty big role in that too, you know.
Yeah.
We talked about with Blake, but if you were starting, if you were at peak bloom in July in Central Alabama, you probably came out okay. If you were planted later and you were just getting into bloom then, and you were peaking August, you were in trouble.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Well, yeah, like she said, you know, we were able to get that bottom crop. I think we talked about that on my first podcast. But I actually talked to a grower the other day, and he called me and said, guess what I yielded? And I was like, I really don't even know. 750, 800 pounds. I'm going to think you near about knocked it out of the park. He said 900 across the board. So I think the biggest thing is people are surprised with what they've gotten, at least with their cotton, because we were able to get in the field earlier this year and get going. So maybe a lot of these folks won't have to go to this disaster program, but I'd use it as a tool if I had to.
Yeah. So what's our, you said nematodes was kind of our big issue here. What's our kind of some of the strategies for that?
So I actually reached out to Dr. Lawrence just because she's done tons of research in nematodes. And, you know, she kind of told us that, look, it's going to have to be a approach that's like an IPM approach. You're going to have to look at crop rotation.
Variety.
I mean, that to me is your number one no-brainer decision, is go ahead and look at a variety that's resistant, either reniform or root knot. You know, there's soybean varieties, there's cotton varieties that do have resistance, so that's going to be your number one line of defense. Also doing crop rotations. We like 2 years of rotation, but prices obviously drive a lot of that. Also, you can use some cover crops. So anything that increases organic matter in the soil is going to help you with your nematodes, because basically the natural enemies of nematodes feed off of organic matter. So as with anything, organic matter is the answer. We can't really have a magic bullet down here to get a lot of organic matter, but there are cover crops such as rye. There's a few more that are really good to plant to help decrease. Obviously, you got nematicides and things like that, but you know, just as far as rotation, choosing the right variety, if you can, plant cover crops. Obviously, tillage can help break up that cycle, but also that'll spread the nematodes throughout the field. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there.
Think about crop rotation too. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like insecticides. And if I go from bifenthrin to lambda, they're both pyrethroids. And so if you rotate to a host, then you're not really doing anything. So you need to make sure you're rotating to a non-host crop to break that cycle.
That's exactly right. And something else, you know, you got to think about weeds in the field. A lot of times, hey, you may have a resistant variety out there, but if you don't control your weeds, they can also be a source of food for the nematodes, just a way to keep them in the field. So weed control is also a big thing to do.
And that's kind of what I was worried about, you know. After everybody mowed their cotton stalks this year, the amount of regrowth we had, well, that's still something that nematodes can still feed on. So we'll say that as much as I don't like it, this cold weather may kind of help us in those situations, because it's at least, you know, killing those plants all the way to the root where there's nothing out there for them to feed on.
Yep. And Christy, with getting into these issues this year, do you think part of it was dry when they were soil sampling last year and just didn't realize they had the populations they had, or maybe a lot of these fields weren't sampled for nematodes, or
just the ones I've been in, a lot of them didn't realize they had as high a population. Yeah, we sampled, but it's been a few years. And obviously in the pockets I looked at in southwest Alabama, they had been through a drought, the plant's already stressed, you know, the root system's already compromised, so that kind of made the situation worse. You know, you had a moist spring, which is good for a nematode to build populations and stuff like that. You go through a drought, So I think it was, hey, we know we got nematodes, we just didn't know the populations were this high.
Yeah.
And they were off the chart high in that area. So
what's our protocol for, I'm kind of more familiar on the precision soil sampling side, but for nematode sampling on a field, how many samples and how do you decide, and what's the kind of the recommendation there?
That's a good question. I mean, the best would be your precision sampling. I mean, back in the day, before, when I was pulling soil samples and did it, we just kind of did it the way the old soil maps ran. So just depending on whatever.
At least you want to capture a soil type.
Yeah, yeah.
Sample separately within the field.
Right.
Yeah, and kind of the way we were pulling in the field, because obviously the soybeans were still growing, so we would go to kind of the edge where the plants were dying, and we would get, you know, you want to make sure you're in the root zone, and I like pulling kind of close to the roots. I mean, that's worst case scenario because that's where the most nematodes are going to be. But we would pull right there on the edge where the plants, you know, they're still alive, but the plants kind of 6 inches away were dead, and, you know, pull out in the area where the plants look better. And pretty much every time you would see it with a lower population where the plants were still healthy, but, you know, where the plants are already dying, I mean, that's where it was a hot spot. So that's the thing about root knot nematodes. You're not going to see them widespread throughout the field. It's normally going to be in localized spots in the area the plants will be
that's
dying.
That's what I remember Bob Kimwright always kind of troubleshooting says, you want as many good samples, as many bad, to kind of really know what's happening. Yeah. So don't just go sample where they are, also sample where they're not, to kind of know.
And do you remember, was there a nematode variety in our peanut trials this year, or a nematode resistant variety?
Is it Florida 52N?
Maybe.
May need to check that, but it was doing well in the variety trials that, you know, I've seen. So that's hopeful. I'm getting a good peanut variety that does well across the board, that's resistant. And Scott, I was blowing up your phone with spider mite calls. So we had spider mites and peanuts even after an inch rain.
Yeah.
So that was another thing to me that took me a little bit by surprise.
I got more spider mite calls on peanuts in, heck, that got into September, didn't it?
It was late.
Like late August through September than I'd gotten peanut calls, period, in my career.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what is happening here? Because like you said, I mean, September we started getting rain again, and it was like, it didn't matter.
No,
I mean,
it didn't. And it's like, do we dig? Do we spray? What do we do? And
I'm like, what do we do? Well, it depends.
So if you recommend something at that point, it's just a mix with the fungicide tank mix, or does it need a separate application?
No, you can tank mix, Okay. But, you know, there is some thought out there that the amount of fungicides that we spray in peanuts – reduces the Neozygotes fungus that kills spider mites. And so it's possible that in peanut fields, or even in our peanut areas where there's a higher percentage of peanuts in the landscape than all of our other crops or whatever, that just landscape-wise, you're reducing that natural fungus, which could make them worse in cotton too. Because most of my spider mite calls are from the wiregrass, or they're from peanut-producing areas. And so that's something I think there's some old literature from the, you know, 70s or 80s on that, and something we probably could try to look at now and try to quantify it for Alabama. But that, I think that plays a role in it.
Yeah, gotcha. That's a good point, because I was looking at some crop acreage, and like you say, southwest Alabama, they're half cotton and half peanut, 50-50 down the lane. It's just as many cotton acres as it is peanut acres in that area, and I mean, they were extremely bad.
Yeah, and you know, peanuts are 170 to 180,000 acres, but when you're making five or six fungicide sprays on it, now all of a sudden that's over a million acres, right? Like that's a lot.
It's a good way to think about it.
Yeah, and so it I hear feedback from some of our industry friends about frustrations with their companies not seeing peanuts as important, because it's such a small acreage crop when you compare it to other crops. But we always talk about, well, when you look at how many fungicide sprays you make, that's actually a pretty big acreage crop in the southeast. And so I think that plays a role in spider mites in the wiregrass or southwest Alabama, either one.
Blake, what's changed from since you were here last time on your in your region, crop wise, or anything new, or learned something new?
Well, I can't say I learned too much, but most everybody's pickers are under the barn now. I think I'd probably say 85-90% of the acres are done with. So I've seen several people planting cover crops past month, few weeks.
I was going to ask how is planting going right now? Are people able to get into the field? I know it was too dry for a while there.
Yeah, that's why everybody's later than they would like to be, and that's the biggest reason. It was too dry, and they were kind of wondering what kind of money they were going to bring in before they spent money on cover crops. I have seen some that were at least planted close to on time, but most everything, what I've been riding by, is just now coming up, or hasn't been long up out of the ground.
How much percent adoption of cover crops is in your region, or in Christie, even yours?
It's year to year. There's a lot of farmers that do it that don't do it across the board. There's some farmers that do it this year and may not do it next year. And then there's some farmers that do it, every single year. Most of them are planting wheat. I think this year there's some guys that planted oats. I do know of one farmer, Dallas County, that's planting more of a three-way mix, but that's, I would say, few and far between. I don't hear many people trying to plant a mix.
The wheat will be a crop, not just a cover, but
some of them will harvest some of their wheat, but no, okay. Most of it is just a cover.
Yeah.
Just a cover.
Similar for you, Christy?
Yeah, I think there's actually been more adoption in the past few years, and I think in my area we're pretty heavy on rye. We just, rye seems to do really well for folks as a cover crop, and I think a lot of weed control that it provides is kind of a decision, because we're kind of in the limbo sometimes with what we can spray over a crop and what we can't. So I think cover crops have proven themselves that they do help. But I think we probably could do a little bit more education around the equipment it takes to manage a cover crop, especially planting into it. With my area being heavy cotton, it's so important to get a cotton stand up. And sometimes, you kind of second guess yourself planting cotton into a cover crop if you've never done that before or had a bad experience or something like that. But I think there's a lot of value in cover crops, and people see that. So I would say the acres as far as cover crops are increasing in the area.
Yeah.
It's been pretty good adoption.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you about the education about it. Some of them preach biomass, some of them, just preach putting something out there for a little bit of erosion control and water holding capacity. And then some people, when you got that mat out there, the soil stays cooler. So when you've got a lot of acres and you need to start early, when temperatures are right on bare dirt, that's kind of a downfall that some people don't want to deal with. But I've been looking into it, and there's a YouTube video that I actually sent Christy yesterday of some farmers in North Carolina that have done it. And the way they have done it, I think, is a lot more beneficial than just throwing a monocrop out there, just a grass species that people generally plant. And I get it, because it's cheap. It does serve a purpose, but anything that, and I'm not a big soil health person, but if we can build a little bit of that organic matter or plant a legume that's gonna put a little bit of nitrogen in the ground, I think back when cover crops were first getting pushed, folks thought they were going to see an immediate return, and that wasn't the case. And a lot of people got burnt because they went and spent a lot of money putting them out there and didn't wait for that growth. Your biggest returns, usually not going to come till year 3, 4, or 5. And still some years you're going to wish you didn't do it, but most of our area, what, 80, 90, 95% of our acreage is dry land. Mm-hmm. So the way the guys in North Carolina talked about it is we're planting these cover crops for that June and July drought, you know, so that we can utilize those March and April rains and hold it in the soil so that we can make it through, you know, like what we've seen the past 2 years where we didn't get any water. Well, if there's water in the soil and you plant something that kind of acts like a, you know, strip till, that roots can actually penetrate the soil and get down to reach that moisture, you can start seeing your benefits. But it's not going to be a, you know, I plant it and the next season we're going to, you know, see great results and better yields and everything else. Is
probably just going to see more bug problems the next year.
I've been waiting.
You in business. And I totally agree with Blake. In a previous role I had, we were looking at, you know, some research as far as cover crops and fertility and this and that. And the biggest thing that increases yield is organic matter. Too bad we don't sell that in a can nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. But organic matter is the biggest thing you can do to help your yield and build long-term sustainability at your farm.
Well, that, and then, you know, going back to nematodes, knowing what species are a non-host, or I'm trying to find the word, deterrent comes to mind, but that's not it, but suppression. There we go.
There you go.
You know, there are certain cover crops that can suppress nematodes, and if you can plant that in the winter going in to your next spring that can hold those off, that's just another part of your IPM program, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're killing multiple birds with, you know.
Yeah. One reminds me, it would probably be good to have Audrey sometime.
Yeah.
Come share some.
Yeah, and actually she and somebody else, we actually have a publication that gives you a list of cover crop species, winter and summer, mm-hmm. that tells you how good they suppress them with, along with other things. It tells you, you know, excellent to poor on erosion control, excellent to poor on water holding capacity, root zone growth, and nematode suppression. And I need to find that. It's a really interesting. Yeah.
I had a graduate student with Kathy Lawrence, Claire Schlomer, who is at Wisconsin now, but she was on a project looking at organic sweet potato production. And so part of what we had was all these different cover crops, you know, by themselves and mixtures, and how we could use that to reduce nematode numbers. I'm not going to say what a single one of those were right now because
I haven't been long to ask somebody about that. And brassicas, mustards, radish, and rye are kind of the ones that stick out. And two, we were thinking in South Alabama, sun hemp's really good. So you may have a long enough growing season in South Alabama that sun hemp could be in the mix if you get your corn off or something like that. You know.
Well, even a lot of those guys in South Alabama, you know, have got cows, and that's what I was showing one of the growers I used to work with in South Georgia. He had pretty much quit growing cotton and was growing only peanuts, so he was letting some land lay out every year. And when I showed him that, don't hold me to this, but I want to say it was sorghum Sudan was one of your bigger suppressors, and he was like, well, you know, I could plant that on my bare dirt or fallow ground in the summer, get a wrapper and bale it for silage and use it for cows, and I'm not just letting land sit there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting some kind of money off of it. And he had a bad root knot nematode problem in his peanuts. So that's what he was, you know, looking at doing. He passed away about a year later, so we never got to do it. So, but that's something that I'd like looking at. Mm.
You guys also have county meetings planned for this winter?
Yeah, right? So we've got...
You want to share some information with us?
Several production meetings coming up again. This is recorded in first week of December, so these meetings, most of them won't start till middle of January, but I'll have a grain production meeting February the 19th at the Black Belt Research Station. Another cotton production meeting in somewhere in Dallas County. It'll be somewhere in Selma. I haven't locked down a location yet. And then Christy and I will also have a grow crops meeting in Talladega on February the 11th. and then I'll let you go through yours. I've got March 6th Deetsville written down here.
Yeah, that'll be a cotton meeting, so we'll kind of focus on cotton there. But January 28th over at the E.B. Smith Research Center, that'll be a crop production meeting. Also February 6th down in Atmore and Robertsdale, we'll hit Atmore in the morning for lunch and then Robertsdale that evening. February 11th, like Blake mentioned, in Talladega, and we'll have Calhoun County that morning. And don't forget about the spray drone end user conference down in Mobile, and that's going to be March the 23rd through the 26th. So that's kind of the upcoming dates that, you know, we'll be offering row crop production meetings.
Are these going to be, I know the spray drone conference, Steve's probably going to have a website, all that separately. It's going to be on the extension, but you going to have all these on the extension somewhere?
Yeah, so that's what I was about to say. So on the ACES website, there's a calendar. All of these will be put into that calendar, but if you want to get on an email list with any of your regional extension agents so that we can send you flyers directly to email, text, whatever, go to the ACES website, to the directory. You know, you can type in our names. It gives you our cell phone numbers, email address, office numbers, anything. Just, you know, shoot somebody a text, email, anything, and tell them you want to be on our list, you know, to know when these production meetings are.
Along the lines of our meetings, and this is not just true for y'all's regions, but everywhere, I think we're going to try to shake them up a little bit, right? We've talked about that. And,
yeah,
and maybe
try to stop boring people.
Maybe. Well, I wasn't going to say that out loud, but maybe try to get away from the traditional PowerPoint, stand up and yap for 15, 20 minutes, and then here comes the next one. And we're hoping to be able to get a discussion with the people out in the room, right? Because we want to answer your problems, not what we think your problems are, but
we want to hear from y'all, and y'all just quit, you know, sitting there listening to us ramble.
Well, I think about this stuff is that may not something kind of very similar format. We don't have agenda here. We start on, hey, what did the crop look like this year? And that gives us enough to get into, well, what happened, what causes, what can we do about it, right?
Yeah, what have you seen? Yeah. What issues, you know, challenges are you facing? What can we do to look at those challenges and try and figure something out with you? You know, anybody that wants to, you know, look at varieties, have a variety trial on your farm. You know, reach out to your extension agent. We'll, you know, do our best to see what we can do for you. But these production meetings, I think the best ones have been, you know, no PowerPoint, sit there, talk. Let the growers talk amongst each other to, you know, see what somebody 30 miles the road is doing a little different that can help them. You know, that's sometimes the best thing, because trial and error from them, you know, can benefit them, you know, more than some of the research that goes on.
Yeah.
So yeah, more informal round table turn row talks. That's what we'd like to do this year with production meetings. We just really want more, you know, face to face, one on one. Let's talk and see what's going on.
All right. Well, anything else we need to talk about or cover, y'all think, before we get out of here?
Got all your points covered, Kristen?
I think so. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for letting me be a part.
Yeah, thank y'all for coming. Enjoyed it. So as always, I appreciate our listeners. If y'all have any topics or conversations you'd like to hear, if you want to be a part of it, please let us know. We'd be glad to talk about anything with anyone, maybe within reason anyway, Blake. but if any of us can ever do anything to help with extension, please don't hesitate to reach out and let us know.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.